What began as a seemingly contained problem in American subprime mortgages in 2007 quickly cascaded into the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. At its core lay a profound truth. Our entire financial system rests upon a form of alchemy, the magical transformation of risky, illiquid assets into seemingly safe, liquid liabilities. This beautiful deception has powered centuries of economic growth while containing the seeds of its own destruction. Banking's fundamental vulnerability stems from two problems. First, banks operate with minimal equity cushions, meaning small losses can threaten deposits. Second, bank runs are self-fulfilling. If depositors suspect trouble, rational behavior dictates withdrawing funds immediately, potentially collapsing the entire system. This isn't just about individual bank risk, but systemic fragility. Imagine 100 banks each engaging in just 6 months of maturity transformation, collectively creating a system where demand deposits fund 50-year investments. Regulators examining each bank individually might miss this massive system-wide vulnerability. The crisis exposed how deeply we misunderstand money, that familiar yet mysterious force that powers our daily lives. Money evolved from commodity exchange when specialization created the need for trade. Without a double coincidence of wants, barter proved inefficient, leading to various mediums of exchange, from grain in ancient Egypt, to cowrie shells in Asia, to standardized coins by 250 BC. For money to function effectively, its purchasing power must remain stable, requiring trust in the issuer, trust that has been repeatedly violated throughout history. The crisis, ironically, began with the 1989 fall of the Berlin Wall, marking both communism's end and capitalism's greatest crisis since the Depression. As socialist economies join international trade, the global labor pool tripled, with China alone creating 70 million manufacturing jobs. Emerging economies drove export-led growth by fixing currencies at artificially low rates. China's world export share jumped from 2% to 12% between 1990-2013. High savings rates in China, driven by weak social safety nets and the one-child policy, created what Bernanke called a savings glut, pushing down global interest rates. Capital flowed uphill from developing to advanced economies through Western banks, creating a banking glut. Banks developed complex derivatives to satisfy investors seeking yield in the low-interest environment while underpricing risk. Their balance sheets expanded dramatically, reaching 100% of GDP in the U.S. and over 500% in Britain, with leverage ratios sometimes exceeding 50 to 1. When trust evaporated in 2008, even small asset devaluations triggered catastrophic failures. We cling to an illusion of certainty in economics, demanding precise forecasts despite dealing with unpredictable human behavior, unlike reliable astronomical predictions like Halley's Comet. Even experts lose perspective in uncertain times. During the 2007 crisis, Goldman Sachs CFO claimed to witness 25 standard deviation moves, events statistically impossible in the universe's lifetime. This revealed fundamental flaws in financial models rather than mere statistical anomalies. Frank Knight's 1921 distinction between risk and uncertainty remains vital. Risk involves calculable probabilities based on experience, like house fire odds. Uncertainty involves unknowable outcomes and probabilities, like future financial innovations or political changes. While economic theory assumes rational probability-based decisions, humans actually use simpler coping strategies under uncertainty. We employ heuristics, rules of thumb, because they often work better in complex situations. Consider choosing a restaurant in an unfamiliar city. Most people rely on trusted recommendations rather than exhaustive research, an efficient response to uncertainty. Central banks have evolved from secretive institutions to public spotlights. Though seemingly ancient, most are relatively new. The Federal Reserve wasn't established until 1914, after two failed attempts at American central banking. A public body must manage money through two core functions, maintaining price stability and providing crisis liquidity. Despite understanding money supply's impact on prices since the 18th century, governments often resort to currency debasement. The Bank of England's pre-1992 inflation targeting era saw prices rise 750% in 25 years, more than the previous 250 years combined. Central banking has shifted from mystique to transparency. When Mervyn King joined the Bank of England in 1991, Paul Volcker's advice was simply mystique. Today, confidence stems from openness rather than intimidation. Even physically, central bankers have become shorter, reflecting less reliance on stature and more on clarity. The Maradona theory of interest rates shows how anticipated policy shapes economic decisions. Like Maradona beating defenders in 1986 by running straight while they expected turns, central banks can influence markets through expected future moves rather than actual rate changes. The ECB's unprecedented intervention during the 2011 crisis, pressuring Italy through demands for spending cuts and reforms, led to Berlusconi's fall and replacement by unelected technocrat Mario Monti. The situation worsened in 2012 as Greece plunged into a depression exceeding America's 1930s crash, with output falling 27% and domestic spending down 35% between 2007-2015. Mario Draghi's July 2012 pledge to do whatever it takes to preserve the euro transformed market sentiment and reduced bond yields, but raised questions about the ECB's constitutional mandate. The euro area now faces four difficult options, with leaders adopting a muddle-through approach. Germany remains resistant to permanent transfers or higher inflation while rejecting breakup. Meanwhile, Brussels and Frankfurt's policies have fueled voter disillusionment and support for non-mainstream parties. Our money and banking system has long relied on alchemy, the illusion of converting risk into safety. Despite post-crisis regulatory efforts to raise capital requirements and establish liquidity ratios, fundamental problems persist. King proposes a pawnbroker for all seasons, PFAS, approach, where banks pre-position assets with the central bank, which determines borrowing capacity through calculated haircuts. Banks must maintain effective liquid assets, this borrowing capacity plus reserves, above their effective liquid liabilities. This would replace most existing regulations except leverage limits. The PFAS system recognizes central banks as the ultimate crisis liquidity source, provides a natural transition from financial alchemy, and balances bank flexibility with risk control. It addresses moral hazard through pre-positioned collateral while simplifying regulation and leveraging existing central bank infrastructure. The world economy remains stagnant despite the end of the banking crisis. Even with unprecedented monetary stimulus, advanced economies grow far below pre-crisis levels, not due to temporary setbacks, but a fundamental imbalance where desired spending can't match productive capacity. Central banks must inject ever-increasing stimulus just to maintain minimal growth. Countries can't rebalance independently due to the prisoner's dilemma, as unilateral action risks putting them at a disadvantage. With interest rates near zero and high government debt limiting fiscal options, nations compete to lower exchange rates, creating a zero-sum game of stealing demand from each other. Money and banking have emerged as capitalism's weakness rather than its strength. While these are human-made institutions that can be reformed, the challenge isn't technical but political. The question is whether we'll implement solutions proactively or wait until another crisis forces change.